It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. For more than 100 years, America's historically black colleges and universities have graduated many of our most dynamic and influential citizens. But some educators worry that a quarter of those schools could be gone within the next 20 years. Tomorrow, we'll discuss a new Atlanta Journal-Constitution series on the future of HBCUs. But first, a look at their past. A documentary airs tonight on PBS that explores the complex history of these schools. It's called Tell Them We Are Rising, the story of black colleges and universities. Filmmaker Stanley Nelson is behind that project, and he joins me on the line. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Could we start with that quote, Tell Me We Are Rising, which you chose as the title of the documentary. Where does that come from?
It came from a quote right after a little bit after the Civil War. A Northern general went to visit the South and kind of to report back on the state of schooling in the South. And he asked a group of black students, what should I tell them up North? What should I tell them about what's going on down South? And a young man rose up and said, tell them we are rising. And we heard that quote and immediately said, this is it. We've got the title of the film.
Let me play something from the documentary. These are the words of Booker T. Washington.
I had no schooling whatsoever while I was a slave. On several occasions, I went as far as a schoolhouse door with one of my young mistresses. I had the feeling that getting into that schoolhouse would be the same as getting into paradise.
So the documentary really paints a vivid picture of the views of slaves and former slaves towards schooling and why they yearned to learn how to read. Was that just a function of having been denied schooling?
No, I mean, I think it's a function of a number of things, but that is, on one of the central points is that, not only was schooling denied, it was forbidden, and as when somebody says in the film, a slave master could do anything they wanted to a slave, but one thing they couldn't do was educate the slave. I mean, there were laws on the books throughout the South that made it illegal not only for black people to learn to read and write, but it made it illegal for white people to teach black people to read and write.
And there's an incredible statistic I was unaware of in the documentary in which it said that some 20,000 people, both black and white, were killed, lynched, because they were either trying to learn or trying to educate in the South.
Right. There's an incredible scene in the film where a white man who had gone to the South to teach African-Americans to read and write after the Civil War is going to be lynched for teaching education. And he's about to be lynched, and they give him a chance to write a letter home. And he writes a letter that starts, my dear, I die tonight. And he goes on to say, just for teaching black people how to read and write. And in fact, he is killed. He's murdered. He's lynched. And that happened all over the South. That's how feared education was.
So it is interesting, though, that some of these schools and some of the schooling began by either white individuals or by white groups that didn't necessarily believe in the intellectual equality of the African American race.
Right. I mean there was a knowledge, especially in the North, from what were called missionary societies, that you have this population of millions of African Americans who were freed by the Civil War and who are not educated. And so there was this idea that they have to be educated, but there was also this thought by many of them that African Americans were not really equal to white folks. And, we'll educate them in what way we can, but they are not equal to white folks.
And the man who founded Hampton University really wanted to teach African-Americans in the trades.
Right. That was one of the things that came out of this idea that African-Americans were not equal, is this idea of what was called industrial education, which was an education for service. So, we'll educate African-Americans to be great cooks and great carpenters and great bricklayers and leather workers and those kind of things to in fact, kind of perform the same duties that they performed, under enslavement, basically.
So I want to play this comment from Mary Beth Gassman, who directs the Penn Center for Minority Serving Institutions at the University of Pennsylvania. And this is a comment that she made when she was on the podcast, Historically Black.
It isn't a good idea to think of them as all alike, because they're not. The one thing that they have in common is that they, at their core, they were all started to engage in racial uplift and support African Americans.
Is that the one common thread? Because coming away from your documentary, it's clear that the history of HBCUs is really diverse. But were they all started to uplift the race?
I think so. I mean, if you look at simply getting an education as uplifting the race. So, you know, some institutions might be more political minded than the next, but I think they were all started to uplift the race. Again, if you broaden that term to mean, you know, educate the race. And I think a part of the kind of politicalness, if you will, of HBCUs has come from the students, and that's come over time.
Another thing that may be surprising, well, it was surprising to me anyway, was the pushback that some cities had that didn't want these schools in their communities.
Yeah, there's an incredible sequence in the film where black people try to start a school in New Haven, Connecticut, the home of Yale. And this is before the Civil War, and basically the town uprises, the mayor and the town uprises, and no, you can't have a college here to educate black people. That'll ruin our city if you can believe it, if you bring black people here who want to have a college education. Again, that's how fearful education was.
So then let's fast forward just a little bit and talk about the effect that it had when African Americans are finally able to go to these schools and get their degree. And it appears that it had more than just the value of the degree. This is Dorothy Smith that you spoke with. She's an alum of Bennett College, an HBCU in North Carolina, and she remembers being interviewed to attend Wilson College first, which was a non-HBCU school.
I have not forgotten her words. Your grades are wonderful, but we're a little concerned because we don't know with whom you would be paired, because we cater to a lot of Southern gentle women and they room in suites. Sorry, kid. So I didn't get to Wilson. I applied to Bennett for a scholarship. It was kind of special.
So what did you hear about the effect that having these HBCUs had on, I guess, the morale of a generation?
Well, you know, that also is very personal for me. My parents both went to HBCUs. My mother went to Talladega in Alabama, and my father, who he and his brother were the first people in his family to graduate high school in Washington D.C. He went on to go to Howard University and then went to Howard Dental School, and it was only because HBCUs gave him an opportunity to go to college, that he went to college. This was in the 1930s and 40s that he went to college. It was only because HBCUs provided this nurturing environment where they told him, you know, you can do it. You know, this will work. You can do it. That he was able to go on and live the life that he lived, which allows me to have the life that I live and my kids the life that they live and on down through the generations, because HBCUs were there for him.
I'm speaking with filmmaker Stanley Nelson. His latest project is Tell Them We Are Rising, the story of black colleges and universities. It airs tonight on GPB TV. Let's hear another comment. Edward Waters College is the oldest HBCU in Florida, and college president Nathaniel Glover is actually a graduate of the school from 1966. He was Florida's first black sheriff since Reconstruction, and here he is speaking to WFSU Radio that he views his role as an educator, much the same as he viewed his role as sheriff in terms of saving lives.
Some of these students would never see the light of day if they didn't have Edward Waters College. And you know what? I am one of those students. It was almost like vindication being able to come back as the president of a college after having made a career of arresting young people. It is the epitome of redemption, I think.
This was what he's talking about is something that was echoed from a number of people in your documentary. And I wonder if you think that view of HBCUs was generational, that one of the reasons HBCUs are struggling is because the younger generation doesn't see them as a lifeline.
First, I want to say that a lot of HBCUs, and probably the majority of them, are not struggling. You know, I mean, we went to probably 30 HBCUs with this film, and these are, you know, strong, incredible institutions. You know, they have, you know, huge buildings and, you know, libraries, and they are, you know, viable institutions. But I think some of these in some HBCUs are struggling is because. Partially, you know, they're not supported as they should be by alumni and not supported as they should be by the general community. I think that, you know, you have no more committed and enthusiastic alumni group than alumni of HBCUs. You know, we've done screenings around the country. People come in their school colors. They come in their fraternity and sorority colors. They stand up and cheer when there's a picture of their school in the film. But they need to give back, and I think that's one of the things that needs to happen for HBCUs. They need to give back. But also, I think all Americans need to give back. And I think when people see the film, hopefully they'll understand why HBCUs are important to all of us, you know, not just African Americans.
So when Booker T. Washington became a president of a university, he was the only black person to head one of these schools. When did the tide sort of begin to turn in terms of having a mostly black faculty and administration at some of these schools?
Yeah, well, we tell a great story about Fisk University in the 20s, and the students there kind of uprise against the draconian measures that are instituted by the president, the white president there, who, you know, he won't let the male and female students walk together. They can't even walk together. He does away with the fraternities, sororities, a lot of the sports teams. And the students hold a strike, and they hold a strike for weeks and weeks, and finally... he has to resign. And I think at that point, you know, students of HBCUs across the country realize that they have power and that the schools really have to adjust to them and change with the times. And so the schools begin to change. One of the great things, the interesting points about Fisk is that the guy, the president who succeeded, the president that was ousted, was also white, but he was much more in tune with the students.
So then I want to play you this comment from Walter Kimbrough, who is president of Dillard University, which is an HBCU in New Orleans. And here he is speaking to NPR.
When I was president of Philander Smith in Little Rock, we had a white female student who comes to Philander Smith. She's one of a handful of white students. She joins a historically black sorority. She's very engaged. She doesn't act like someone that she isn't, and she's fully engaged in the life of that campus. So there should be more students who are looking for that kind of experience as well, but it always seems that we expect black students to be the ones that will have to go out and experience, you know, these diverse environments. And
Stanley, do you think HBCUs at this point are as welcoming to white students as they are to blacks?
I think they are. I mean, at schools, there's a number of white students. They've always been welcoming to white students. It's never been like you had to be black to go to an HBCU. They've always been very diverse. Some HBCUs have a huge Latino population at this point, and many schools have a number of white students. And, you know, I think for the white students at HBCUs, they get, for 4 years of their life, they get a totally different view of America and a view that can serve them very, very well for the rest of their lives.
You know, the debate over HBCUs has been renewed under the Trump administration, mainly because I guess there were promises that he made during his meeting with the presidents of those colleges and universities, and then he changed his mind in terms of support for the HBCUs. And I wonder whether you think HBCUs are still necessary, or should we be working harder to make sure that our public universities, all of them, are as diverse and welcoming to all races as we want them to be?
Well, I think, you know, I agree with both of those statements. Obviously, we want all of our institutions to be more diverse and more welcoming. But I think HBCUs are still needed because, until we end racism and racialism in this country, until every student entering kindergarten and first grade, you know, has the same chance of an education as they go through junior high and high school, until that day, we still need HBCUs. And I think it's a question that you know, we shouldn't even be asking. You know, we don't ask, do we still need Catholic universities? We don't ask, do we still need women's colleges? We don't ask, do we still need yeshiva? We don't ask these things. So I think it's important that we understand that HBCUs are still needed. They still graduate an outsized number of African-Americans who go into the STEM field. They still graduate an outsized number of African-Americans who go into law, medicine, dentistry, who become judges. So HBCUs, I think, are still needed. And I think, you know, if we want to have the country that I think we all want to have, where every person has an opportunity to get a higher education if they want it, where every person has the opportunity to have their lives fulfilled, I think HBCUs are needed.
That is filmmaker Stanley Nelson. His latest project is called Tell Them We Are Rising, the story of Black colleges and universities. It airs tonight at 9 o'clock on GPB TV. Stanley, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Great.
Tomorrow we'll talk about the future of HBCUs, but if you attended or attend an HBCU, tell us which school, why you chose to go there instead of somewhere else. You can call us at 404-500-9457. We're also on Twitter at OST Talk. A shout out to Clark Atlanta. My great-grandmother went, got her teaching degree at Atlanta University a few years after the Civil War ended, and she wasn't a slave anymore back in the 1870s.